is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haidar, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is the full story. A week after the Adelaide Festival disinvited Palestinian-Australian writer Randa Abdel Fattah from its Writers' Week, organisers have issued a complete and unreserved apology. The South Australian event collapsed after the author was dropped from its lineup and more than 180 writers pulled out. Now, with a new board, the organisers have apologised for the harm caused and invited Abdel Fattah to speak again in 2027.
I accept this apology as a vindication of our collective solidarity and mobilisation against censorship. I accept this unreserved apology as acknowledgement of the harm inflicted on our communities. I will consider the board's invitation to participate in 2027 Adelaide Writers' Week at the appropriate time, but would be there in a heartbeat if Louise Adler was the director again. Whilst the Adelaide Festival statement acknowledges the harm done, it is not a quick fix to repair the damage and injury inflicted.
I spoke to Randa Abdel Fattah just moments before the board issued its apology about why she's considering defamation action against the South Australian Premier and what this moment represents. Randa Abdel Fattah, thanks so much for joining us on Full Story during what has been a really intense week for you.
Thank you so much for having me, Noor.
You are a writer, you're an academic, you're an advocate, you're also a mother looking after school-aged children on school holidays, and you've been at the centre of the biggest national story this week. I appreciate your time. How are you holding up?
Look, it's been difficult, as you said, because it's happened during school holidays, and the toll of racism on me personally is one thing, but it reverberates into family life. And whilst, you know, my photo and stories are being plastered all over Instagram and TikTok, and my teenage kids are seeing it, and my school age kids are having to deal with my time being distracted, what gives me sort of strength in this moment is the collective solidarity and the collective support, and my kids can see that, and I explain that to them. I'm using this really as a teaching moment for them, and I hope that that gives them the strength to be able to really cope with this moment.
Mm. And I do want to talk about the support that the literary community has shown you. But before we do that, your lawyers have served a formal concerns notice for defamation action against the South Australian Premier, Peter Malinauskas, over some comments that he made at a press conference on Tuesday.
Can you imagine if a far-right Zionist walked in to a city mosque and murdered 15 people? Can you imagine that as Premier of this state, I would actively support a far-right Zionist going to Writers' Week and speaking hateful rhetoric towards Islamic people? Of course I wouldn't. Now, the reverse has happened in this instance, and I'm not going to support that either.
Those remarks have been reported widely. I wonder if you can explain why you're considering going down the path of legal action and if he or his office have attempted to contact you since you sent that letter.
My understanding is we've had no contact by the Premier or the Premier's office. We sent that letter because the Premier, who has never met me, has never spoken to me, I am a private citizen, have had absolutely no interaction with him, has really stepped over every decent line and connected me and compared me to a terrorist, to an extremist, to a terrorist sympathiser. And those words are harmful. They have real life impacts. They are egregious acts of racism against me, and they represent a punching down. You know, for a Premier to say this to a private citizen is really a form of punching down on somebody, and we have sent, you know, concerns notice about that.
He was asked on the ABC's 7:30 program last night whether he was prepared to go to court over this, and his response was...
Well, you know, Michael, every single thing that I've said throughout of this, you know, I've tried to make sure I think through carefully. The position I've taken on this, you know, I've got to examine my conscience and do what I believe is right. Everybody can see the remarks that I've made, Michael, in the context in which I've made them, with a desire to sort of advocate the case for basic human decency and respect for other people's views and opinions. And I think when they see my remarks, they will be able to form their own opinion.
Did you watch that interview, and what is your response?
I watched it and I thought, what a disingenuous word salad. There was no compassion or decency in his words. So that to me was just, you know, an attempt to absolve himself through something that I think most people can see. It does not align. It is totally inconsistent with the viciousness of his personal attack against me. And what is even more concerning is not just the impact on me, but the association that makes between Palestinians and the Bondi terrorist atrocity, which was not committed by Palestinians. Mm. And so this has wider implications than just the, you know, vicious personal attack against me.
Mm. Authorities have said that that attack was inspired by Islamic State. Without an apology or retraction, do you intend to pursue this further?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Rhonda, I would like to go back to the initial statement that was the catalyst for the mass boycott of the Adelaide Writers' Week. When the Festival Board released its statement announcing that you'd been disinvited, they said that whilst they were not suggesting that you had any connection with the Bondi attack, given your past statements, it would be, quote, culturally insensitive to continue to program you so soon after Bondi. What went through your head when you saw that statement published online?
Can I rewind and just explain that I first heard about it in an email, and that email simply said that my presence would be culturally insensitive in light of a time of national mourning. There was no reference to past statements. That's been retrospectively applied to fortify that initial outright, blatantly anti-Palestinian racist decision that was conveyed to me. I was shocked by the brazen sort of admission that that was why I was being disinvited. And then I was shocked to learn that her statement had been published online. And not only that, every single writer in the festival received an email from the board explaining that a decision had been made to remove me, Miss Rhonda Abdel-Fattah, Dr. Rhonda Abdel-Fattah, from the festival. It wasn't enough to post it on websites or Instagram. Every person, my peers, had to know personally from the board that I had been disinvited.
Mm. Within hours, if not minutes, of that statement going live, other authors began withdrawing from the festival. The backlash was huge. 180 presenters essentially withdrew from that festival before it collapsed entirely. Some withdrew in direct support of you as a Palestinian author who has faced sustained attacks. Others on the basis of the broader principle of free speech. Has the scale of that response surprised you?
Yes. I expected that there would be a wave of collective solidarity after Bendigo. I was surprised that Adelaide Festival hadn't learned their lesson from Bendigo. But I think that what we have witnessed is a watershed moment in sort of Australia's cultural scene. To have that many people withdraw and for the momentum to build so quickly in such a short space of time is unprecedented. It really does speak to our collective power, and that is what sustains me in this moment, that there is hope against a ruling class, against elites, against, you know, powerful Murdoch media to shut us down, to silence us, and we have shown the power of the collective.
Mm. You mentioned the Bendigo Writers' Festival there. You have weathered these sort of public attacks in the past. With Bendigo, they issued a code of conduct to authors who attended that festival or who were going to attend that festival, asking them to refrain from commenting on certain divisive issues and also requiring them to adhere to a particular definition of anti-Semitism. I've not seen, though, a groundswell of support like this before, and there have been, attacks or campaigns against other figures within the arts and other cultural institutions. Do you think the board misjudged the sentiment, the mood within the literary community?
Yeah, I think I've been thinking about what the difference is, and I think it's two things. The first is I think that they really shot themselves in the foot by so blatantly attaching me to the Bondi atrocity and being so brazen and unashamed in their anti-Palestinian racism. I mean, we've all seen institutions and managers write really slimy kind of excuses to de-platform people before and use the language, leverage the language of safety in ways that make it hard to maneuver around that. But this was a very blatant, blatant act of anti-Palestinian racism. There was no way they could get out of that. And I think the second point is that this was a clear politicization, a clear, opportunistic weaponization of a terrorist attack. And people can see through that. People could see how anti-Semitism, which is exactly what the Bondi atrocity was, an act of anti-Semitism, was being weaponized against Palestinians. And so I think that people can see through this now. The veneer has completely been lifted. The masks have been lifted. And people were insulted by that kind of politicization of tragedy and grief.
Mm. Earlier this week, the festival director, Louise Adler, who invited you to be a part of the program this year, resigned. She has championed marginalized voices, including Palestinian voices, for many years. And she said upon her resignation that the increasingly extreme and repressive efforts of pro-Israel lobbyists to stifle even the mildest criticism has had a chilling effect on free speech and democratic institutions, and that's what you've been referring to. Do you think some would view her resignation as a win?
Yes. I believe that in some quarters, the goal was Louise Adler via me. I think that Louise Adler has been a thorn in their side for a long time, as you say, because she has championed the marginalized and she has stood firm. She's utterly principled and ethical. And it is a tragedy that she resigned, but it's because she's so principled that she did that.
Mm. We touched on this earlier, Randa, and I want to delve into it a little bit more deeply. The festival board referenced vague past statements that you've made, not anything that has been formally published or any of your books, in its decision to drop you. So I want to ask you about some of the most frequently cited social media posts that have been a lightning rod for criticism from some Jewish groups, from the coalition, from some media organizations. In one tweet, you said that Zionists had no claim or right to cultural safety. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Yeah, and I welcome the opportunity to speak to somebody like you to explain that, even though I resent the fact that in all of this, a Palestinian is being asked to explain her advocacy against an active and live stream genocide, is being asked to tone police the way that she expresses her tweets, because they are very often maliciously misquoted and mischaracterized. But I understand now that the propaganda machine has been so, so extensive, and there are so many new people now who are reading my work that they might not understand the context. And so I welcome the opportunity to clarify. That cultural safety tweet was made in the context of the State Library of Victoria cancelling an online poetry workshop with a group of marginalized poets and writers on the basis of cultural safety, at the same time as Womelaid cancelled or disinvited a Palestinian electronic dance group. So they were weaponizing this language of cultural safety. And so I intervened in that context. And I understand that people actually don't understand what cultural safety is. I intervened as an academic. And the only point I will concede is that I misunderstood people's understanding of what cultural safety is, and also my reference to Zionism. So cultural safety actually emerges from Maori, indigenous healthcare practices, and it's about the right of colonized oppressed people to safe spaces. It is about acknowledging harms done by racism in these structures. And it is something that is afforded to individuals, to racial, ethnic, minority, oppressed, colonized groups, not to political ideologies. I have always made a distinction between Zionism as a political ideology that emerged from Europe that justified and argued for settler colonialism to replace the majority indigenous population in Palestine, and Jews and Judaism as a distinct religious group. Mm. There is a distinction. You can be a Zionist and not be Jewish. You can be a Jewish person and be anti-Zionist. So there is a distinction. Zionism is not a racial category. So in that sense, what I was arguing is that you cannot use Zionism as an excuse to shield you from critique. It is a political ideology that can be and should be subjected to the same critiques that we subject any political ideology to. And you cannot claim the right to cultural safety to shield you from critiquing an ideology that is actually carrying out a genocide in real time. And so by extension to that, where is the cultural safety for Palestinians? Where is my cultural safety to speak out against a genocide? Where is the cultural safety afforded to me as a Palestinian Muslim woman to speak out against what is happening to my people?
Mm. And you raised that point there, that there is a large and growing body of evidence that Israel is committing a genocide. I want to, and I don't want that to sort of get muddied in this conversation, but I want to ask you about the other bit of social media activity that seems to be appearing time and time again in some of the coverage of you in parts of the media. And that is a post or an illustration of a paraglider with a Palestinian flag that you shared on Facebook. When and why did you share that?
So I shared that. That was a meme that was going around on sort of late 7 October, early 8 October, and I shared it. It is really, really disgusting for people to assume and to twist this as a glorification of violence. It was a celebration of a symbol of freedom, representing the freedom of Palestinians breaking out of their blockade. They had been living under land, sea, and air blockade since 2007. It was a symbol of a prison break. It was not a glorification of the violence that ensued on that day. That war crimes were committed is quite clear. And in fact, we have been calling as Palestinians for investigations for Hamas and Israel. And it is the Israeli government that has refused to welcome those investigations in. So there's no denying that war crimes were committed. But as a Palestinian who has witnessed her people under siege and blockade since 2007, that represented, that paragliding represented a symbol of freedom. And it's actually, if you want to go back into the historical context of resistance symbols, paraglides, kites, ballooning, water bikes were all actually forbidden to the people of Gaza under blockade. So there's actually a historical symbolism around, for example, Banksy using the image of a balloon with that iconic picture, with healthcare workers and psychologists asking children to draw pictures of kites as a form of freedom and symbol. And so that paragliding was about an iconic symbol of freedom. That is all it was, a celebration as a Palestinian of this breakout against an impenetrable nuclear-armed, you know, US-backed state. Mm. I hope that makes it clear.
You're an anti-racism scholar. That is the prism with which you engage with these conversations. And so I want to go back to some of the remarks made by the South Australian Premier, because he has made the point that you were part of a group of people who co-signed a letter in 2024 calling for Thomas Friedman to be removed from the Adelaide Writers' Week lineup after he compared nations in the Middle East to insects, including wasps and spiders, in a piece for the New York Times. The board at that time did not act on those calls, but there are headlines today accusing you and accusing Louise Adler of, quote, hypocrisy. Can I get you to break down your stance?
Sure. I think what's missing in all of this is at the heart of what we are talking about here is actually not freedom of speech. It's about power. What we're talking about is an imbalance of power, and we're talking about racism. And that is, for me, the principles upon which I have acted and upon which I advocate. Thomas Friedman wrote this horrific article within the context of Israeli politicians calling for genocide on the basis that Palestinians were human animals. So it was deliberate language. And in our view, it was an incitement to genocide and ethnic cleansing. And a group of marginalized Indigenous academics, we wrote a very well-researched letter to the Adelaide board with references, including an explanation of the way these kinds of racial tropes have been deployed against Jewish people historically and the harm that has caused. We did that. We don't have access to premiers making political interference. We don't have access to lobby groups. We were a group of academics who wrote a quite boring letter, researched with footnotes and references, asking for Thomas Friedman not to be platformed given the racism and the danger of his statements and the harms it would cause. And we left it at that. We received a letter from the board reaffirming the importance of artistic freedom, but explaining that due to a scheduling conflict, he would not be appearing. And that was the end of it as far as we're concerned. I absolutely and unequivocally reject the equivalence between a writer who deploys racial language to incite genocide with me, a Palestinian, advocating for my people. I reject that equivalence. I do not see this as a debate about free speech or censorship only. I see this ultimately about anti-racism, and the principles that I stand for are the right for us to speak up against genocide, and for not only that, to affirm the right of all people, including Muslims, Jews, Christians, non-believers, to freedom, life and dignity. And it was on that basis that we wrote that letter. Mm.
We'll be right back.